Hi, welcome to a walk around London with some great love poetry to light up our hearts and find out a little bit more about the capital city that many of us live really close to. Starting off on Gough Square, built by a wool merchant, Richard Gough. Samuel Johnson moved here to number 17 to be closer to his publisher whilst he was writing the Oxford English Dictionary. A lot of his quotations are still used today. And in the house that he lived in, which was one of around 20 during his life, in the window on the right, you can see a reflection of his portrait. He was thought to have Tourette's syndrome and had lots of tics and affectations that were undiagnosed at the time. One of the poems he wrote, "I put my hat upon my head and walked into the Strand. And there I met another man whose hat was in his hand. Hermit whore in solemn cell, wearing out life's evening grey. Strike thy bosun, sage, and tell what is bliss and which the way." Thus I spoke, and speaking sighed, scarce repressed a startling tear, when the hoary sage replied, "Come, my lad, and drink some beer." The house itself has been used for many things since. And just next to it is a house built for the curator that was used in the 1900s. But during the Great War, during the bombing raids, while men would put out fires around London, the curator let them use this space here to have tea and to refresh themselves between jobs. So I think there's a lot of history and broken moments that would have been felt here. So I've chosen Pinter, It Is Here, for that. What sound was that? I turn away into the shaking room. What was that sound that came in on the dark? What is the maze of light it leaves us in? What is this stance we take to turn away and then turn back? What did we hear? It was the breath we took when we first met. Listen, it is here. So many people might have just seen each other for the very last time right by that curator's house. So moving through now into the arch and just onto the road that runs next door, we have the Mourne Library. Now it's part of King's College. It was, however, used for inspiration during Dan Brown's book. It was the dodecahedral room that inspired the Da Vinci Code part of the plot there. It's also where Jews were allowed to live if they decided to change their faith. In the early years, part of this was voluntary, and it was called the House of Converts during Henry III's time. But this became a little bit more aggressive with Edward I, and it was called the Expulsion of the Jews when they had much less of a choice in 1290. And this carried on till about the reign of Edward III in 1377, when the building was then annexed, the chapel of it was broken up. But in 1617, the chapel that is now part of the library was rebuilt by Inigo Jones. And this is the place where John Donne preached during the consecration of the re-established chapel under much nicer circumstances. So John Donne himself had quite a heavy life. His brother was put in prison for harbouring a Catholic priest who he betrayed under pressure, under torture, and the punishment to the priest was awful, sort of hanged, drawn and quartered. And John Donne's brother, Henry Donne, also died. This did cause John Donne to question his faith in the 1500s. He was a graduate of Hertford College in Oxford. And here we've got one of his poems. "Dull, sublunary lover's love, whose soul is sense, cannot admit absence, because it doth remove those things which elemented it. Our two souls, therefore, which are one, though I must go, endure not yet a breach, but an expansion, like gold to eerie thinness beat. If they be two, they are two, so as stiff twin compasses are two. Thy soul, the fixed foot, makes no show to move, but doth, if the other do, and through it in the centre sit. Yet within the other far doth roam, it leans and hearkens after it, and grows erect as that comes home. Such wilt thou be to me, who must, like the other foot, obliquely run. Thy firmness makes my circle just, and makes me end where I begun. A supple argument unfolds with lyric grace. So with his work, John Donne was thought of as being very sort of realistic and more physical in his poetry, and did sort of create a change in how poetry was approached. So walking away now with Mourne Library on our left, walking up, you'll see a statue coming up on your left of John Wilkes, Mayor of London, MP in 1757, a radical. And he wrote this essay on woman. O sons of men, attempt no more to rise, but own the wondrous force of woman's eyes, who big with laughter your vain tale surveys, and shews her power a thousand different ways. Know all the happiness we hope to find depends upon the will of womankind. Which I think was a really progressive poem for a man to write in the 1700s. Moving along the road towards the bank at the top, and you'll see an engraving coming up on the wall on your right. Thavies Inn, named after a Welshman. The double D being a th. John Davis, or John Thavie. He was a Holborn armourer, and he gave money for a church in 1349. Thavies Inn, though, is where John Donne lodged to become a lawyer. The inns of courts were outside the city wall to start with. Henry III didn't want communities of students cropping up in London after he'd established many colleges in Oxford. So what had previously happened was the lawyers were congregating in St. Paul's. At that time, St. Paul's was kind of full of relics, things like a vial of blood from John the Baptist, we hear, was there, amongst an arm of a saint. But it was also more of an open place to go, and you could conduct other business there. But to make life easier for the students of law, these inns of court were created, and there was one right here, Thavies Inn. Walking past it and around it, and then looking out on your left, is the church that John Thavie bequeathed. And it is still money that he created a fund for, is financing this church partially. He is currently having a refurb. Look up to the tower. This featured in Dickens' Oliver Twist. Fagin looked up at this during the plot. One of the poems by Dickens, Lucy's Song. How beautiful at eventide to see the twilight shadows pale steal o'er the landscape far and wide. O stream and meadow, mound and dale, how soft is nature's calm repose. When evening skies their cool dews weep, the gentlest wind more gently blows, as if to soothe her in her sleep. The gay morn breaks, mists roll away, all nature awakes to glorious day. In my breast alone, dark shadows remain, the peace it has known, it can never regain. So certainly Charles Dickens, known for documenting some of the hardships of Victorian life. Other events that happened around this church was the marriage of a poet, William Hazett, to Sarah Stoddard in 1808. And a bit later, 1828, it's where William Marsden found a young girl starved to death on the steps of the church. And because of this, he started the Royal Free Hospital that's now moved slightly out of London. So from that poverty came a great inspiration. And this is the view that John Donne would have seen while he stayed in his inn of court opposite the road. Just one more poem by John Donne. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less. As well as if a promontory were, as well as if a man are of thy friends, or if thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Some of that actually applies to today, I think, in such a huge way. I think it was written in the 1500s. So moving on forward, and we head towards Shoe Lane. There was a workhouse here, a number of things. It's given its name because there was a farm on the outer side of it, away from the city, and the land of the farm was the shape of a shoe. But other things that have been here that maybe not so nice is a cockpit. So animal baiting was really popular, and Pepys is said to have visited this. It's also where a poem by Keats was inspired. It's kind of is sad from the point of view. It's written for another poet, Thomas Chatterton, who travelled around Britain trying to get a patron. Poor man. He went to Bristol and almost got lucky there. But he actually died of an overdose of arsenic when he was 17, and his grave was in the Shoe Lane workhouse. And just a few days before he died, he was seen to have been actually going inside dug graves, so saying he was trying one on for size. So it's one of those things that many truths are spoken in jest for him. So a poem by Keats, inspired by his friend. Keats himself died at 25 of TB, so thankfully we have the genius that he documented. Endymion was the poet that he wrote, and here's a slightly different one by Keats. You say you love, but with a smile, cold as sunrise in September. Oh, love me truly. You say you love, but then your hand, no soft squeeze for squeeze returneth. It is like a statue's dead, while mine for passion burneth. Oh, love me truly. Oh, breathe a word or two of fire. Smile, as if their words should burn me. Squeeze as lovers should, oh kiss, and in thy heart inurn me. Oh, love me truly. So considering that along Shoe Lane as we walk, this would have basically been sort of going back from Saxon times to Middle Ages, this would have been a farm here. So a quirky poem by Carol Ann Duffy, Valentine. I give you an onion, it promises light, here it will blind you with tears like a lover. It will make your reflection a wobbling photo of grief. I'm trying to be truthful, not a cute card or a chrysogram. I give you an onion, its fierce kiss will stay on your lips, possessive and faithful as we are, for as long as we are. Take it, its platinum loops shrink to a wedding ring, if you like, lethal. Its scent will cling to your fingers, cling to your knife. So walking down towards the junction of the Farringdon Road. So Farringdon Road just shows how cities are built upwards, because this is where the subterranean Fleet River would have run. The Fleet was always a shallow river, but basically this Farringdon Road, if we were here sort of 1500s backwards, we'd have wet feet. It's also known for where a lot of rubbish was thrown. Not the most sort of sanitised thing. But some of the names of the roads on the opposite side gives us a clue, because Seacol Lane, which is on the opposite side and to our right, was named after the coal merchants who brought it in by sea. And we know that further down on opposite side, Beer Lane, that was on the land survey of this area from the 1600s. So that would have been a sort of way of people had buildings on Seacol Lane to get down to the Fleet River. Moving forward a bit, the Fleet River, when it became dried up here, enabled there to be a Fleet prison to make way for that on the opposite side. There were bars on the window, and debtors were allowed to scream out for donations so that they could pay their way, pay the man in charge of them. In fact, if you could pay the jailer enough, you were allowed to live out of the prison. The jailer basically get his earnings off the people that were condemned in the cells. And also, on Fleet River, there was the Fleet Tavern. And this is where Yeats, when he came to Britain in the mid-1800s, created the Rhymers' Gang. And this was a way for poets to come and have their poetry read out. And Yeats was inspired by Keats and also went on to inspire other poets. His Easter 1916 poem went on to inspire work by other British poets that really sought to create that real sadness of war breaking, such as the 1st of September poem that designated the time where Nazi Germany invaded Poland. So interesting how all of the poets together come and join and find out that in some ways we're perhaps writing about the same things. So moving ahead now, we will find ourselves just at the top of Newgate Street with a church right opposite St. Sepulchre Altars. And there was a church here in Saxon times. It's been modified many times through. Christopher Wren rebuilt most of the churches after the mid-1600s, not only because of the fire of London that ran through the city, but also because of the fact that so little had been done to the buildings, because there'd been a need for keeping the buildings exactly how they were and not having too many people come and rebuild new houses. But this did mean that a lot of houses needed to be levelled to the ground. So the church itself has a big connection to Newgate Prison that was opposite, and the bell would ring at midnight for the person who was about to hang. And Newgate had seen some very famous people. Ben Jonson, the playwright, was imprisoned here for killing a fellow actor on stage. He eventually got out because he said he was a clergyman, and so the benefit of the clergy meant they could not be hung, so he was lucky because of that. Oscar Wilde was imprisoned here, and he had very bad treatment here. It was oakum picking for him, this horrible tarry sort of rope that he had to unpick. And also, his mental health became slightly compromised by the treatment that he was receiving. He was transferred to Pentonville and later Wandsworth Prison, and then, thanks to a real sort of kind-hearted Liberal MP, he got transferred to Reading Jail, where he was known simply as C33 because he was on the C ward and room 3 and on level 3. He was allowed to read Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress and also allowed to have the Bible as his reading material. Thankfully, a pen and paper was smuggled into the cell, so he was allowed to write arguably some of his most moving poetry. And this also became testimony for changing how the law operated of people's sexuality. So his huge activism came also from a very low point. So here we have Ballads of Reading Jail. In Reading Jail by Reading Town, there is a pit of shame, and in it lies a wretched man eaten by teeth of flame. In a burning, winding sheet he lies, and his grave has got no name, and there till Christ call forth the dead in silence, let him lie. No need to waste the foolish tear or heave the windy sigh. The man had killed the thing he loved, and so he had to die. And all men kill the thing they love. By all let this be heard. Some do it with a bitter look, some with a flattering word. The coward does it with a sword. The coward does it with a kiss. The brave man with a sword. So a really encouraging way there of facing things head on and not really selling yourself down the river, really, I think. It's hugely inspiring. So, moving from the church itself, St. Sepulchre's, just on our left is the oldest drinking fountain in London. The first one, it would have been a trough, it would have led to the various markets with Smithfields just ahead, and food would have been grown just out of the city and then shipped in. So, water or fresh water was a real precious commodity. But it also shows how cities are built layer upon layer to the urban metropolises that we have today. So one of the poems that is a modern poem by Alice Oswald, who studied at New College in Oxford. Dunt, a poem for a dried up river. Very small and damaged and quite dry. A Roman water nymph made of bone tries to summon a river out of limestones. Very eroded, faded, her left arm missing on both legs from the knee down. A Roman water nymph made of bone tries to summon a river out of limestone. Exhausted, utterly worn down, a Roman water nymph made of bone, being the last known speaker of her language, she tries to summon a river out of limestone. Little distant sound of dry grass, try again. Very speechless, very broken, old woman, her left arm missing on both legs from the knee down, she tries to summon a river out of limestone. It's a pitiable likeness of clear running, struggling to keep up with what's already gone, the boat, the wheel, the sluice gate, the two offers, larruking along, go on, little loose end shorthand unrepresented, beautiful disused route to the sea, fish path with nearly no fish in. So that's just a reflection on how water is important. So crossing over the road to Newgate Prison, there's a blue plaque on the wall. And so William Penn, founder of Pennsylvania, was incarcerated here for his Catholic beliefs. And there were some really famous characters. Jack Sheppard, for example, the thief who kept escaping. He was written about by John Gay. So some of the characters inspired the Beggar's Opera and satires of the Victorian times. So a little bit from John Gay. All in the downs the fleet was moved, the streamers waving in the wind, when black-eyed Susan came aboard. Oh, where shall I find my true love find? Tell me, ye jovial sailors, tell me true, if my sweet William sails among the crew. And Jonathan Swift was another Victorian satirist of a certain time. So Newgate Prison was closed briefly in the 1400s because the conditions were so bad. And during that time, Dick Whittington, famous for pantomime now, but was a real London mayor four times. He paid a lot of money to improve the conditions of the jail, so some people actually did survive long enough to be hung. So moving from Newgate, a place of faith, and further down, we approach the remains of a church, Christ Church. It's just along the road and major crossing, just crossing over to the left. You'll see it's been restored by Merrill Lynch, a bank. So one way that capitalism is really returning a lot of the heritage to our cities. Perhaps it's become the only way that some can survive. And this has got an interesting story because it was actually saved by Henry VIII's son. When Henry VIII passed away, there was much more commands for the monasteries to be further dissolved. But the Grey Friars actually came to Britain in 1223, and this was part of the community that they established. It had been dissolved by Henry VIII, but thanks to his son and his advisors, it was decided that part of it should remain. And due to this, the housing opportunities in London generally became better because there was more places to live, there was a lot of more empty properties with the religions disbanded as far as Henry VIII were concerned, and many priests and nuns returned to Italy or became sort of non-religious people, depending on what choice they wanted to make. And so the ruins that you see are the result of just time and bombing in London, and the gardens, the actual plants, actually return the land to its original purpose, because the monks that originally lived here would have tended the land and made sure that this was materials for St. Bartholomew's Hospital that is still running to the north of the church, about 100 yards too. So Edward VI founded that hospital, and I've got a W.H. Auden poem for this because I think, like, Edward VI was more loving than Henry VIII, and this is why I chose this one. Looking up at the stars, I know quite well that, for all they care, I can go to hell. But on earth indifference is the least we have to dread from man or beast. How should we like it with stars to burn, with a passion for us we could not return? If equal affection cannot be, let the more loving one be me. Admirer as I think I am of stars that do not give a damn, I cannot now, I see them, say, I missed one terribly all day. Were all stars to disappear or die, I should learn to look at an emptying sky and feel its total dark sublime, though this might make a little time. So looking up at the stars from Christchurch is a beautiful thing. And now we have our final stop. We're going to go to St. Paul's. Excuse me. So crossing the road, and coming up just on your right through a gap in the buildings, you see Christopher Wren's masterpiece. And for that, I've chosen a poem by Bukowski, Miracle. I have just listened to the symphony which Mozart dashed off in one day, and it had enough wild and crazy joy to last forever, whatever forever is. Mozart came as close as possible to that. And I think St. Paul's Cathedral, to me, really is all about infinity, because it's lasted for so long. It survived three fires, one in the 900s, one just after that, and then the Great Fire of London. And it's just iconic, and inside it would have carried such great kudos. And also it's where Christopher Wren decided he wanted to be buried, with a simple marble tomb on top. And the simple inscription, if you want to see a monument, look around you. saying that your legacy is basically how you leave this world, and that what you do really is important, which I find really inspiring. So Christopher Wren was a fellow of All Souls, and he had the poem written for him by Hugh Chesterman. Clever men like Christopher Wren only occur just now and then. No one expects in perpetuity architects of his ingenuity. And a lot of Christopher Wren's architecture around All Souls College inspired J.R. Tolkien, the Birmingham educated lad who went up to Exeter College. All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes a fire shall be woken. A light from the shadows shall spring. Renewed shall be blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king. J.R. Tolkien was then called up on the 7th of June 1915 to be the signals officer on the 11th Battalion of the Lancashire Fusiliers during World War One, and during that time had some very intense experiences that we share with him through his writing. So at the end of our London tour now, just ahead, we see the Temple Bar. It was called Bar because it literally was a bar in front of the temple gate that would mean that people couldn't get into the city. So to protect the city, originally a Roman city, but then since that, everyone's kind of used the defence system of the wall to stop people, undesirables, coming in. So it'd have bars there, but this has been moved from its original place, which was just further along the Strand, to outside St. Paul's Cathedral. Now, on top of this was a customs man who would look at who's going in and out, and Chaucer was one of these in the 1300s. He would have seen the peasants' revolt if it had come past that gate. He was would have been there. And we don't know an awful lot about this genius. Chaucer changed English language because originally it was written in Latin, and suddenly Middle English was allowed to be used. We know Chaucer travelled a lot around Europe, and also that he married the handmaiden of the wife of Edward III, which would be Philippa of Hainault. Not that that was the queen, so he married her lady-in-waiting. So a very high-profile man, and left his Canterbury Tales that was all about if you wrote the best story on your way pilgrimage from London to Canterbury, then you got a free meal on the way back at the Tabard Inn in Southwark. That was your prize. And it was also a great way of representing people that weren't the upper classes, which for the 1300s was a really progressive way of writing. Chaucer, since I from love escaped, I'm so fat, I never think to be in his prison taken. Since I am free, I can't count him a bean. He may answer and say this and that, I do not force. I speak right as I mean, since I from love escaped am so fat. Love hath my name struck out of his slate, and he is struck out of my books clean. For evermore there is none other mean, since I from love escaped am so fat. So there is the very end of our London journey, just with the quote from Samuel Johnson, who we started with. The chief glory of every people are with its authors. So this is my handing the baton over to you. What will you write? What will you author? What legacy will you leave? It could be very simple, could be very natural, but be the author that this people needs. Wishing you a wonderful week ahead.